Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of All Things Aviation and Aerospace. I'm Vince Mickens. Today, we're going to talk about a different aspect of aviation that, even though it is right under our noses and many of us who use them frequently, seldom give them much thought and even take them for granted. Airports. And even more importantly, airport careers. Even when we talk about flying, it's usually focused on the airlines, the private jets, corporate aviation and the like. But we seldom think about how we are able to arrive in an airport, transition to boarding an aircraft, arriving at our destination, transitioning to ground transportation, and things like that. What most of us do not think about is what's going on behind the scenes, or even right in front of us sometimes, that in most cases makes for a smooth experience, and even in difficult circumstances or emergency situations and the like, when it matters the most. We are traveling safe and sound. Sometimes we don't even realize what goes on behind the scenes again that allows that. I could not have a better guest on today to give us all of the insight of what an airport operation truly is and what it takes to run one. And after talking with her during show prep, I am fully convinced that considering the scope of responsibilities she's had at 3 international commercial airport operations, I think she could run for governor or maybe even president. It's actually that impressive and that significant. That said, in spite of her legendary and iconic background, this show wouldn't be complete without including an up-and-coming aspiring airport manager who is ready to follow in her footsteps the path she has paved. Okay, enough of that suspense. I consider it an honor and a privilege that the invitation to be a guest on my show was gracefully accepted by none other than Miss Angela Gittens. While you may not be familiar with her name, there's a very good chance that you have flown through her airports that she's managed: Miami International, Atlanta Hartsfield International, as well as the Deputy Director for Business and Finance Departments at San Francisco International. She was also the Director General of the Airport Council International, better known as ACI World. And among her many accomplishments and accolades, including being enshrined in the National Aviation Hall of Fame, she's been on 2 FAA committees, including the FAA Management and Advisory Committee and the FAA Research, Engineering and Development Committee. But like many of us deeply rooted in the passion of this industry, retirement doesn't quite fit her DNA. Currently, Angela is serving as the president of, and I'm going to mess up the name, SCPO. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Of SCPO USA, which governs Terminal 4 at New York's JFK. And she has also done things like sat on the board of JetBlue, et cetera. Angela, it is so wonderful to have you on the show today. Welcome to All Things Aviation and Aerospace.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on, and I feel honored that you're considering an airport as a subject. So thank you for that.
Actually, very excited to consider it. And after talking with you, I really look forward to our audience really learning a whole lot more about what goes on with making an airport run smoothly. And you having dealt with the busiest airport in the world, I can't imagine anything that you haven't experienced or seen, et cetera. So very excited about this opportunity.
Thank you.
And then my other guest, all due respect to Angela, since she's going to do some live mentoring for us, our other guest is the very impressive Chantel Clark. Chantel, who is originally from Jamaica, man. No, I'm just kidding. I just had to throw that in. I don't know why I had to do that. Went to school in Kingston, was a double major in marketing and operations management at the University of West Indies. And yeah, a bit of an overachiever. But if you think that's impressive, after working outside of the industry for a while, she decided that she was going to enroll in and was accepted in the graduate program that she's just about to finish at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach to earn a Master of Science degree in Aviation and Aerospace Operations and Aviation and Aerospace Management and Sustainability. And as I said, in just a matter of a couple of weeks. In fact, she said 2.5 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. So she's pretty excited about it. Chantel will, when she graduates, she's after she graduates, she's biting at the bit to start her career in airport management. So this is the perfect combination here to have her on with the iconic Angela to talk about all things airport. So really looking for that. Chantel, welcome to All Things Aviation and Aerospace.
Hi, Vince. Thank you for having me. And thank you for inviting me once more to come back on the program.
I was
Angela,
going to
you're
say,
a
I should have
beautiful.
said welcome
Yeah,
back.
welcome back. Welcome back. This is, I'm so
Yeah,
honored to be here
absolutely.
to speak with both of you. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So, I'm going to start out with telling a story because I think it's interesting. And I think it makes a statement of kind of what I like to express in the show and what this show is about. And that is how I actually met Chantel. So, last year at the National Business Aviation Association's annual convention, while I was attending the leadership reception, which takes place the evening before the convention starts, this young lady, Chantel, walked right up to yours truly and introduced herself. Cool. I was like, okay, she's assertive. That's great. And then she asked who I was and what I did. I said, okay, the assertion continues. Then she proceeded to tell me who she was, what she was doing, and what her aspirations were in the aviation industry. I was like, wow, cool. This doesn't happen every day. And we struck up a really good conversation. I did keep getting interrupted because there were people that I knew, and she got interrupted a few times too because there were people that she knew, which was impressive to me. But it was an impressive encounter, and well, I kind of feel like she's been attached to my hip ever since. I don't know any better way to describe
We
it.
keep hitting into each other, yeah.
But after, yeah, exactly. But after having briefly met Angela, and I don't know, Angela, if you remember that I met you at a National Aviation Hall of Fame event, it was a real brief, hey, how are you? Pleasure to meet you. Congratulations, type of a thing. But knowing that Chantel was pursuing airport management, I doing what I do, I was like, okay, I got to figure out a way to connect these guys. But then after I kind of started digging into the background of Angela, I thought, wow, yeah, I got to connect them, but I also need to have Angela on my show because this is some pretty impressive stuff she's doing. So I really that was my next effort was to figure out how to send in get an invite to you, Angela, and get you on the show. And voila, here we are. So that's my story. Now, while we're in the story mode, you guys have to hear this. Especially for those who are still trying to figure out what they want to do. And, for those who think you always have to have a plan and it's going to work out exactly the way you have in mind. And nah, it does not happen that way. Angela, tell us about you and the early part of your career and how you kind of tripped into aviation management.
Well, frankly, most of us in aviation management tripped into it because most of us didn't know there was such a thing as airport management. I think most of us felt that, well, airlines run airports, which unfortunately is how airlines think, and didn't realize there's a, as you say, there's all this in the background. That's being developed, designed, and operated by these folks that work for the airport, which is usually owned by a city, a county, or a state. So I was in the healthcare field, and I guess my brand was getting things done. I worked in a bureaucracy, and in bureaucracy, sometimes getting things done is, an art unto itself. And so that was my reputation. I get a call one day that the airport was looking for a deputy director of business and finance, which was my area at the hospital. And this was a former colleague. He said, "Can I put your name in the hat?" And I was just about to say, "Well, no, I have a my education and my career is in the hospitals and healthcare. Why would I go to an airport?" And I remembered what an executive recruiter had once said to me. which was never turn down a job you haven't been offered. So I said, yeah, okay. And so a couple of months later, I get a call from HR at San Francisco Airport, and I get called in for an interview. And I did what I would never advise people to do, which is no research. I didn't know anything about the airport. I barely knew that the airport was a city department like the hospital was. And I go to the interview, and the airport director, and he's telling me all this stuff. And I'm thinking, wow, this is really interesting. And I say, well, who does? And I named several activities. I said, well, who does this, that, and the other? And he said, well, you would if you got this job. And I thought, oh, okay, obviously I didn't get this job. But 2-3 weeks later, I got called in for another interview. And at this interview, one of the things he asked me was, what would you do if your staff didn't like you? And I said, well, how would I know? Meaning, how would they act? Because that would make a difference. And it turns out that's what he was looking for. What he heard was, why would I care? And as it turned out, the airport was going through, or the industry was going through a big change. This was in the early days of deregulation, which completely changed the airline industry. And he could see that that meant the airport side would have to, airport management side would have to change, because airlines and airports up until that point kind of had the same outlook, you know, because the airlines were protected under regulation. And so they had a long-term outlook, just like the airports did. And they worked with airports in design and operation and whatnot. And he could see that was not going to be the case anymore, that airlines were going to have to deal with the competition, and some would go bankrupt, some would survive. And so and now it was up to the airport to serve its community by truly taking a holistic approach to the management, you know, without necessarily getting the help from the airlines that they used to get. In making some of these changes, his management, his direct reports, didn't really understand it. And so they were just kind of passing along instructions. So there was a lot of tension and hostility within the airport, and particularly with his managers not really managing, not really owning the changes that had to happen. And so a person he thought didn't care about being liked by the staff was just what he needed. And that's how I got the job, on a complete misunderstanding. And so when he offered me the job, I thought, well, you know, if I ever wanted to get into the airport business, what would I say? You know, I have this career in hospitals, hire me. So I thought this was an opportunity, so let me take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The worst that could happen is I didn't like it, or they didn't like me, and I go back to my healthcare career. I had a strong career. And so kind of my management, or my personal philosophy with respect to my career, has been, what's the worst that could happen? And if I could handle the worst that could happen, go do it.
Sure. Let me ask the obvious question, though. What is it about the airport industry, business, in aviation that attracted you so much? Because you did have a successful career in a completely different field. And you kind of stumbled into it, but you've been in it ever since. As a matter of fact, you've accelerated in it with all of the things that we're going to be talking about that you've done. So what was it about it that drew you in and has kept you?
I was a sociology major in college, and sociology is the study of people as members of groups. The hospital world, under one roof, is you have these different players: doctors, nurses, administrators, technicians, lab and x-ray technicians, all these folks who have licenses and owe their duty to the licensing board, working on the same people. But in a hospital, they mainly, most of them work for the same entity, the hospital. Doctors sometimes know, sometimes they work for medical school. The airport is you have all these different people who all work for different employers. So at a large airport, for example, you might have 130 different employers. You may have 30,000 employees working for those, working every day, not talking about pilots and flight attendants, coming to work every day or 5 days a week for all these different employers but all basically dealing with the same people, the airline passenger or shippers. So from a sociological point of view, this is a fascinating situation because somehow you, the airport management, has to make it all work, but none of these people, or very few of these people, actually work for you. You don't have much authority, if any, because there's also a lot of governmental agencies that are at the airport and have their own regulations and their own authority. They don't work for you, yeah. And they don't have to listen to you either. so, and sometimes they don't. But you've got to make it all work for that one entity, which is the customer, the airline passenger. And so that's a challenge. That's an hourly, minute by minute challenge that is just fascinating. And then
so you're the ultimate in politics as a politician, the diplomat, an ambassador, you know, all of the above to get all of these people to work together. And I think, you know, again, we'll dive into it a little bit more, but I think your point is well taken about the fact, and it sounds like you were actually attracted to the fact that you deal with so many different people and entities. And we were talking about it before. So an airport is like a city. You know, you've got your fire department, your medical services. I remember you mentioning that sometimes the airport has its own fire department, and sometimes it has to use the county or another entity's department for the airport, which is interesting because the airport has certain requirements based on if there's a crash or things like that, that it has to be able to handle and that type of thing. Before we get too far into that, Chantel, your original degree, what was your original degree again at
Marketing and Operations Management. It was Marketing and Operations Management.
Marketing Operations Management. And you didn't initially start in aviation, and then you made a change. So what caused that? What brought about that change? And then why airport management? Why have you been so drawn to that?
So actually, for me, I didn't stumble into airport management. I kind of discovered it when I was 8, but I didn't know that was a name for it. Because at the time, we had a national airline that essentially, you know, got sold. And so the adults at the time around me were very passionate about this airline not shutting down and how can we fix it. And so I went to like our shelf and the bookshelf and pulled out a encyclopedia and tried to figure out like, how can I fix an airport? That was the question I would like bounce around in my mind. And at the time when I would ask my parents, like, where can I go to read about this? They didn't really have any insight. And when I would get older, a lot of the industry is geared towards pilot training. So I liked marketing. I was good at it. It was something for me to do my first degree in. So I went that route. But I always told myself I would come back around to this because it held so much appeal to me because it's like Angela said, like there's so many different components that need to work together to make an airport successful. And it's almost like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You don't see all the entities that make the chocolate, but the chocolate's really good. So I thought that was really intriguing to me.
That's a heck of an analogy.
The Oompa Loompas, right? So you never see them, but they're doing most of the work. And so I thought it was really intriguing. And I always told myself I was gonna come back around and see how I could do, you know, put my foot in the pool and see like, do you really like this? And I'm stuck now.
So that's interesting because we've been talking about people stumbling into something or not knowing what they want to do. But in your case, you actually had an interest in it and didn't really know what it was, but you knew you had an interest going way back when you were a young child. And so it's you're like the kid that wants to be a pilot, but doesn't know how that's going to happen. And eventually, one way or another, it does. Only for you, it's airport management. And this is music to Angela's ears because we don't hear this every day. So, in fact, we don't hear this often at all about somebody actually wanting to do something like that. Angela, can you tell us a little bit more about, because, you know, you ran two very large airports, Miami International and, of course, the infamous Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, long name. Most of us just call it ATL, but but you ran that airport and you actually did, you had to do some turnaround with that. I have experienced both of those airports extensively and can appreciate a lot of what was done, what it was like before and what it's like now and what had to be done in both instances, including Miami International. Can you tell us a little bit more about the overall aspect of airport operations and what you have to deal with when you're running something that massive with active passengers coming through all the time?
Well, you know, there's always a joke that airports are always under construction, right? Because aviation, commercial aviation certainly continues to grow and the expectations continue to grow. And so airports have to continually, besides maintaining something where if you think about these multiple ton airplanes bouncing on your pavement, all these passengers with the, you know, going through your airport, walking on your floors, all these cars coming through, walking, driving on your roadways, that maintenance becomes a huge factor in an airport, and you constantly have to renovate, rebuild, and then because things grow, because you get more people, you have to extend your capacity, and that gets more and more difficult because you only have so much space, and for most airports, they can't go beyond their boundaries because you've got homes and other businesses and people and communities, you know, really kind of resent airports encroaching into more space.
Even though a lot of communities were built around airports, but oh, go ahead.
oh yeah. No, I mean, privately we say, you know, we were here first.
Exactly.
Because the airport attracts that kind of development, and we,
right,
you know, we work very hard, you know, with federal government and local legislators on being very careful about what kind of development should come to an airport, so that we don't want schools, we don't want, you know, residential properties, you know, we want more industrial properties or recreational properties that are not going to be bothered by, annoyed by the noise, while we also work with the airlines and with the aerodrome, with the companies that build airplanes, to reduce noise and to reduce emissions. That's a major element in the industry, so that we reduce our noise and emissions footprint so that we're better neighbors in the community. But that's a constant issue that will never change. You know, the need for maintenance, the need for security. You know, a lot of what airport managers do is in relation to external shocks that then, like a 9/11 or, you know, a COVID, mm-hmm. that then affect how you can manage the airport. And we deal with the fact that many of the entities that affect the airport and how we operate have no idea what the airport is like. You know, just like we, before we get into the airport, well, we're dealing with the same thing. So now, with COVID, dealing with health departments that airports had not, for the most part, had not dealt with before, and health departments did not deal with airports. So now trying to keep ourselves in operation while the health department has the authority essentially to shut you down, even though that's not what they're trying to do, but with their regulations, they could shut you down. Same thing after 9/11 when the TSA came along. They weren't intending to shut us down, but some of the things that they wanted to do would effectively shut us down. So as the airport, you're always constantly having to deal with external entities that have authority over you, but don't necessarily understand you. So one of the things—
from my airport's point of view, can I just jump in real quick? From my airport's point of view, for both Miami and also Atlanta, you were at Atlanta when they were doing the Olympics, and then you were at Miami right after 9/11. What was your strategy for leadership, especially after those two major events?
So, well, for Atlanta, it was before, well, the issues for Atlanta was kind of a vice grip, because before I got there, there was this huge scandal with the previous director soliciting bribes from concessions. And then we had the Olympics coming. So we had to both recover a concession program and put some integrity and true business concepts into a concession program, have a fair process for getting concessions, but then also prepare for the Olympics, which required physical changes because Atlanta was a connecting airport and was an excellent airport for connections, but now had to be what we call an origin and destination, an origin destination market, which are people who are coming to Atlanta, getting off the airport and going into Atlanta or the community, or coming from Atlanta and neighboring communities and getting on a plane to go somewhere else. And those facilities for origin and destination were very inadequate, just physically inadequate at the airport. So we had to deal with that. Atlanta had been mainly domestic airport, but the Olympics is an international event. So we knew there were going to be a lot of international passengers coming. So we had to develop facilities and operations for international, which is different than domestic. Security is much more of an issue. This is before 9/11. So security is much more an issue for an international market, as well as because it's the Olympics, you have heads of state, diplomatic types that may require additional security. And then there's, potential conflicts somewhere out there in the world that you don't want visited on your airport.
I wanted to interject something. So Atlanta Airport was always, sorry to interrupt you, but it's relevant to what you're saying, has always been considered a very busy airport, but primarily domestic. Do you feel that the things like the Olympics really put it on the international map and changed the scope of things?
Absolutely. The influx of business, both international and domestic. I mean, and it affected me. I had to change. I was living in Atlanta. I had to change the way I got to the airport because there was so much more traffic. This is after the Olympics. So much more traffic because of the businesses that had been drawn to Atlanta. I mean, this put Atlanta on the international map. And the business community and the civic community did a very good job of marketing itself and giving opportunities for various businesses, international and domestic, and it worked. And Atlanta became this kind of international hub that it hadn't been before.
Yeah, and did that play a role for you, going back to the career thing for a minute, with that experience, is that what opened you up to the whole international aviation community? Because it seems like around or after that time, you got involved with organizations like ACI, et cetera, and that you played a much larger role on the international airport scene, for lack of a better term.
Well, actually, I had international experience before I went to Atlanta, because San Francisco had you know, was an OND airport and had a big international presence. And in fact, with ACI, so I was involved with ACI at San Francisco. We were in the Pacific region. Atlanta was in the North American region. And then when I went to Miami, we were in the Latin America Caribbean region. So when the ACI job, when they were looking for an ACI person for a new director general, even though I had been in the U.S. the whole time, I had been in three different regions for the world. And so that made me a more attractive candidate.
Absolutely. Sorry, I got those kind of mixed up. But as you describe it now, it makes a whole lot of sense. It brings me to another point, though. And again, this is kind of swinging back towards the career aspect of things. One of the things that you talked about when we were in pre-show prep was that it's important to learn as much about every aspect of what you're doing when you're working in an airport environment. So even when you were only, you know, dealing primarily with business and finance at SFO at San Francisco International, you were mentioning that you were making it a point, especially since it was still kind of new to you, to learn every aspect of the airport, even if it wasn't something that you, you know, had to do.
Absolutely. So operations, you know, is the bedrock in terms of the safety and security side. So I learned as much about operations, you know, with our operations management, maintenance, as I mentioned, you know, is something that is crucial for an airport to just stay alive. So, you know, when I would get on committees, ACI committees or FAA committees, to learn not just kind of the broader view of the airport, but the broader view of the whole industry and how that works, and, you know, and what the federal government does, and what some of the associations do, and what their role is, and the International Civil Aviation Organization, which deals worldwide, is kind of the worldwide regulator, and it's fascinating. All these parties that go into making the aviation industry happen. You know, the airports being part of that, obviously, but there's so much more to it that you as an airport manager need to understand, because you need to understand where some of these rules are coming from and what you may want to do to influence what those rules are.
Yeah.
Okay, so then for a younger professional, like you're entering into the industry and you want to be known as an expert in your field, so you're building all this rapport and this expertise in that space, how can those young professionals still become experts but also be well-rounded in all these other areas that you had just mentioned?
Well, there's various things they can do. One, right within the airport, you know, airports are always having to deal with, you know, things that come up. So they have committees and task forces where they put the various departments together to solve a problem. Volunteer for those. You know, get into those so one, you start learning about the rest of the airport, but also the rest of the airport starts learning about you. So your name starts to be coming up. And what you did at that forum, where you introduce yourself to Vince, that's the kind of thing that you should do. Go up and introduce yourself, whether it's within the airport environment, or if you can get to a conference, maybe your airport is hosting an ACI or AAAE or some other conference. See if you can go to it, even if you have to, you know, sort of, you know, be a registrar or something. You know, get yourself in there. And start meeting people, start getting your name out, start asking questions, start showing interest, because that's how your name starts coming up when others are starting to look for, oh, we need someone for this committee. Well, how about that Chantel person? You know, maybe she'd be interested. That's how it happens.
Okay.
Be interested. Do your job, do your day job, and be good at that. But also keep your tentacles out for the rest of the airport and the rest of the industry?
So, you know, there's a commercial that we've all heard where they say, you know, join a certain branch of service and see the world, be a pilot and see the world. I haven't heard manage an airport and see the world, but I heard you say that when we were talking earlier, where you were like, I got to see the world, and I got to thinking about that. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to have her talk about that for a minute, because that's kind of interesting.
Well, one thing about airports is there's usually only one in a place. And so to go to another airport, you got to go. You got to leave. You got to leave town. You can't just, I mean, New York is different. You can just get on the subway and go to another airport. But most places you can't. And then so many, you know, particularly now, or, you know, soon, once we get fully recovered from COVID, there's so much travel between countries. You know, Americans travel a lot, and then America is visited a lot by people from other countries. So you, as an airport manager, need to have some engagement with other airports. And, you travel there, they travel to you, and you wind up seeing the world.
I want to ask a question on that, actually, because since we're talking about different types of airports and you are talking about like collaboration, how would different airports work best together? What would you advise or recommend for maybe like a large scale airport or a smaller scale airport to still provide the same level of service to the customer, to the airline passenger?
That's what associations do. That's what an ACI or a AAAE do. They bring these various airports together. Each one have committees of subject matter experts that look at various problems and emerging issues in that arena, and disseminate that to the rest of the airports, you know, to all of the members. And that's a very easy and convenient way. You know, they're very well organized. And there's, you know, each of those entities have staff that, you know, that facilitate these engagements. And then they also work with legislative bodies, again, to try to influence getting good legislation, good rules, and try to deter bad legislation and bad rules to help or avoid hurting, whether it's large airports, small airports, medium-sized airports. And to some extent, the nice thing about airports is they're willing to help each other, because if you have one airport, you know, you're out of business, right? So, you know, every airport needs every other airport to run particularly safely and securely and efficiently and all of that. So large airports are only too happy to lend their expertise and their staffs to smaller airports to help smaller airports and medium-sized airports to do their jobs well. You know, they may have less money and they may be less able to do some of these things. You know, when I was at ACI World, we set up a program we called Apex in Safety, where airports would lend us their experts that we would send to another airport that requested it to help them, you know, to review their safety elements and help them improve. And by the way, the large airports always learn something from the small airports, because the small airports have to be very creative because they don't have much money. So sometimes the small airports would give the large airports ideas on that they could use back in their place. But that's the way airports are. Then we extended that program to security and environment and, you know, and customer service, all kinds of things. But that's the nature of airports, even though airports to some extent compete, you know, especially internationally for international hubs and, you know, and to get airline service. But as I say, they have an enlightened self-interest in making sure that other airports function well.
You know, we talked about a little bit about 9/11, the effect of that, and about the about COVID and the effect of that. But on a day to day and just on an ongoing basis, you do have occasional emergencies of different sorts. You know, you have a bad weather emergency that causes a shutdown or what they call a ground stop and things like that. And it can be a severe weather thing or just a typical weather thing, and other types of things that can happen. The occasional crash. We've been pretty fortunate about that in recent decades that we just haven't had that we haven't had it with the airlines. We've had some of the smaller aircraft and things like that. But just in general, what's your perspective on that? How do you handle those emergency situations when you're running a large airport? And how does that play out, I guess, as I'm asking?
You have drills, and once a year, maybe once every 2 years, you do what we call a live drill. So you have a scenario. This is for an accident, let's say, or whatever the scenario is, because you have a variety of scenarios. It could be an aircraft accident. It could be an active shooter in the terminal. It's various things. Hurricanes. I was in Miami, so we had hurricane drills, and so we had protocols for all of these things of who does what. What are the numbers to call? What are the resources that we need? You may have them already, or you may have to get them. Where are they? So you're drilling all the time. Most of the time we have what we call tabletop drills. So you're not out there in the field doing things, but you are in a room with, again, this panoply of entities from these different companies and agencies, and you go through, you develop a scenario, and you go through who would do what, and in what order, who's in charge of what and when, and you do that all through the year.
Yeah, Chantel is about to graduate, as we mentioned earlier, with a graduate degree in aviation management, etc., and she's ready to go. She's biting at the bit to get started. How does she get started? Where does she start? And then how does she make her career progress after she gets into, the airport business, so to speak?
Well, she can start with, where does she want to live, and, see if that airport, if that airport is hiring, get herself known. I would say, to join or to go to a conference in the area, so you can start meeting multiple airport folks. Again, if you're mobile, because airports are not usually near each other, so you'll have to move depending on what airport it is. Start applying. Someone like her, from what you've described to me, has a great background, so I don't think she's going to have trouble getting in. It would help if she kind of indicates what it is she's looking for. She could go on the ACI website, because they list the various jobs, because airports will, post their jobs on that website. So start there so she can see what's open, as well as, start sending out her resume to airports that in places that she wants to live.
Chantel, not to put you on the spot, but to put you on the spot, what do you want to do in airport? What's the ultimate goal in terms of airport management?
The ultimate goal would be to work in an airport or aviation industry, right? As an advocate for the interconnectivity between sustainability innovations and airport management. I know that's like a space that is kind of like building out right now as we speak in each airport. Airports will choose how they want to navigate sustainability on all different types of fronts. So I guess that would be the ideal. I mean, also to run the airport, why not? Let's just put the two of them together to be in the space where we have like innovations in sustainability and airport management.
Yeah. Airports are looking for that. Both innovation and sustainability are big items on the agenda right now. Sustainability is something that airports are, and aviation in general, has really got a target on our back. You know, we have got to get our footprint down, emissions, noise, you know, it's CO2, it's, and then they keep coming up with, you know, we have NOx. And so that's an arena that's very busy right now. And the associations are very much on it. And in fact, you might even consider looking at an association, ACI North America or ACI World, or AAAE, because they need subject matter experts in those fields as well. And with respect to innovation, that's the buzzword now, because again, the industry is changing. This is an industry, I always say, is a new era about every 5 years. And we're in it now. The technology, both the opportunities for technology, as well as the dangers of technology, are huge issues right now. So those are three arenas that you would be very attractive for.
When you're talking about technology, are you also referring to advanced air mobility and the eVTOLs that are coming into play and that pretty soon are going to be all over our airspace? Because we know there's a lot of development going on in that area, and the FAA has their hands full trying to figure out exactly how that's all going to fit. From your perspective, from the airport side of it, how do you see that playing out?
Well, from the airport side, you got to do two things. One, you need to listen to those new players that are going to be trying to come in. They're developing, and it's going to be here soon. But what are the business models? You need to try to understand what they are trying to do, and then you also need to educate them about the airport. The same issue as we had to deal with TSA and health departments. These folks don't understand the airport environment. So they need to understand, one, what the opportunities are, what do airports need and what can airports tolerate, as well as, as airports, we need to appreciate these folks are coming. This should be, a good thing for the community and for the aviation industry and for airports.
Yeah.
It's a little confusing because it's not always clear. And as I said, there's different business models as to what role they want of the airport, because in advanced air mobility, one track could be they don't need the airport. This is within urban areas, not the airport. The other, and this is more
great
how
point.
Is that the airport can be a main player for them. And we have to figure out, to make it easier for the customer, can we not have those customers go through the same system as all the other customers, but yet keep strong security? And that's going to be something that really gets teased out. And from an airspace point of view, that's what the FAA is trying to figure out as to how to take advantage, on the one hand, of what these folks can do, but how to keep them from further congesting a very congested system. And that's all playing out right now.
Yeah. I was just thinking about the something that you said earlier in talking about that the airport industry is dynamic. It's constantly changing. This is one of the areas, the area that you're talking about when you talk about sustainability and innovation and eVTOL and advanced air mobility and drones and all of these things that are factors in the airspace of a particular airport area. Which brings me to a question about modernization and just your perspective on it, where you see it going, because there are some airports that, you know, you go to and you're like, wow, what a great airport. And there's some you go to and you go, when are you guys going to catch up with everybody else? And I know, to your point about budgets, government agencies, whether it's city, county, state, you know, et cetera, and even federal, and then the relationship with the FAA. I know I sound like I'm all over the place, but all of these things come into play with the very question I'm asking about, which is, you know, again, your perspective about modernization and how that works, especially since you played a significant role with two major airports that have undergone some, and three, if we count JFK too, that have undergone some significant modernization.
Well, when you have a growth scenario like the airports I've been involved with and with JFK, then it's a little easier to try to raise money. You typically, you sell bonds and the market, you know, sees your growth potential, your revenue potential, so that you can pay back the money.
So another aspect of the job, fundraising?
Big time. Big time. you know, okay. Airports are expensive entities, and you get your money from airlines, from commercial activities, from parking, all kind. You know, and you keep looking for more arenas to get money. And modernization often comes with the and the reason, and you design it this way, with the opportunity to gain more revenue. You know, better concessions, you better retail, better food and beverage, so that passengers will buy more. You know, better locations for advertising, better parking options, so that people will park. And now, because of, you know, issues of sustainability and congestion, you know, you have the Ubers and the Lyfts. And so the airports have gone through the last 10 years or so, you know, getting revenue out of them because you're losing revenue from taxis. So you have to keep rethinking all of this because of what goes on in the wider world. It's not about you. You receive the impact, but it's not something you're doing. But, you know, and you know, the eVTOLs are going to help with respect to environmental sustainability, but we still have to figure out, you know, where are we going to put them, and how are they, again, what's their business model? Drones, you know, initially airports were terrified of drones. You know, is this going to be this impediment? It's going to be a, you know, a safety and security issue, you know, which they are, but there's regulations now that are helping. But, you know, then airports started embracing drones because you now can use them for runway inspections, for, you know, the areas outside of the airport operations area that are still part of the airport, and which can be expensive and time consuming to inspect, but you need to do that. And now you can do it with drones. So, you know, and this keeps happening in the business, you know, things that look like threats and indeed may be threats, but are also opportunities. And you know, it's part of your job to mitigate the threat and pursue the opportunity.
Yeah. As we wrap up, a couple of things. One, I want to see if Chantel has any other questions she wants to ask you while we're live. But the other thing I wanted to kind of reiterate is that there are, because the airport is what it is, it offers a ton of opportunities in terms of skill sets, because absolutely, I would imagine you need just about every skill set that you can imagine in an airport.
Every skill set you see in the city, you would have at the airport. I mean, we have water systems, electrical systems, mechanical systems, administration, marketing, business, you know, commercial activities, obviously the operations, you know, and safety, pavement, pavement maintenance. We got it all. We got it all.
Yeah. Chantel, we're about to wrap up here in a couple of minutes. Anything else you wanted to comment about or ask questions about?
I guess the only thing I'd probably want to ask is, now you're at the pinnacle. I'll call you afterwards. But no, you're at the pinnacle of this industry, and you are now seen as a leader of change beyond just your airports that you had been in before. How do you maintain the same on the ground perspective now that you're in these higher up positions?
Well, I'm no longer higher up. I'm retired, right?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever you say,
we believe you.
But when you're higher up, you're looking for talent and potential in the various areas. I always look for not just in attracting but retaining. I always look for stars. So you know you have your staff, and you look for folks that have great potential. They have, you know, a work ethic. They have an attitude. They have curiosity, as well as, you know, they're good at, you know, the specific job they're doing, but they're never satisfied with just the job they're doing. They're always thinking, you know, we could do more. We could do that over there. You know, those are the kind of people you want, people who spark. You know, they're productive, but even more importantly, they're always looking ahead, and they're never saying, the one thing you never want to hear is, well, we've always done it this way. That is such a red flag, at least in the airport business, because the way you did it 5 years ago probably makes no sense now. And things that you wouldn't have considered 5 years ago, maybe you better do that. You know, and I've had both situations.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. We have unfortunately run out of time, but we've covered a lot, and it's really been a great conversation. Chantel, I hope this is a good extra boost for you as you get ready to step into your career.
Thank you. Definitely would.
I think you said you're getting your degree on May 7th.
Yeah. We're almost there.
There you go. So less than 2.5 weeks away. She's counting. She can probably tell us how many hours and everything else, minutes.
Well, I would tell her, start now. Start the process now.
Absolutely. I always like to, let our special guests have the final say of things. So, Angela, any final words about the airport industry and just your general perspective of the future?
Well, I think, one of the issues that we are really grappling with is how to attract people into the industry, the young, smart people, because as you said at the very beginning, we're taken for granted, you know, we're just there. So people know to be pilots or flight attendants or air traffic controllers, but we need them on the airport side. And so, we particularly want young women to consider us as well, you know, all young people. So as you mentioned, there's so many careers at the airport. So, you can be almost anything and have a career at the airport. And then you're part of this larger picture and can grow from it. And move around within the industry.
Well, I think that says it all. And again, Chantel, we wish you the absolute best. with your pursuit
Thank
of
you.
your career. You have a cheerleader right there with Angela, because you're delving into an area that we don't often see everybody, you know, running towards, so to speak. So and Angela, absolutely a total privilege and pleasure to have you on the show, and to be able to hear your wisdom and experience that you've had over the years in all things airports.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Ladies, you guys take care. And again, it's a pleasure having both of you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thanks again for joining another edition of All Things Aviation and Aerospace, a webcast video and podcast audio production of the Private Air Media Group. My ultimate goal with every show is to inspire aspiring young aviation and aerospace professionals by letting you know of the plethora of opportunities and possibilities in our rapidly expanding industry. And now, no matter what your skill set is, there is a place for you in one of the most exciting industries on the planet. Yes, I'm a little biased about that. To watch or listen to this or check out my library of shows, go to All Things Aviation and Aerospace or the Private Air Media Group on YouTube, Facebook, or LinkedIn, as well as Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, take care, stay safe, safe flying if you're a pilot like me, and have a great one. Take care, everybody. Thanks for joining us.